Is that okay, Mr. Chairman?
We're back on the record. Call the committee back. Well, we're going to look at the dash two amendment, so let's defer to Marilyn to tell us what the bill is supposed to be doing.
Can we open the work session?
Yeah, work session. It's all supposed to be for us, a work session.
Yes.
So there is a work session on 163?
Okay, we have some amendments, the dash two amendments. These were prepared after we convened a work group with Kevin Mannix, the City of Portland, the State Police, the Chief, and the Sheriff's Association, and gave the Oregon trial lawyers an opportunity to comment. This also addresses some of the concerns that were raised by the committee when we heard this bill previously. This bill would create immunity for injuries or damage arising out of the operation of a vehicle pursuit. But this is the amendments change that instead of an outright grant of immunity if they have a policy, subsection 2 applies, says it provides that the immunity does not apply if there was an unjustified deviation from the policy, or if the policy was not the major cause of the injury, death, or damage. Subsection 3 adds additional requirements for the written policy. The first requirement was in there already, that the pursuit be conducted under the direction of a supervisor. The second adds a requirement that the supervisor directing the pursuit has the authority to terminate the pursuit at any time. That's new. Subsection C was already in there about the number of vehicles, designation of the number of vehicles that can simultaneously participate in the pursuit. Sub D was previously in there about coordination with other jurisdictions. Sub E is new guidelines for pursuit operations and tactics. And sub F is also new guidelines for determining when the interests of public safety and effective law enforcement justify initiating, continuing, or terminating a pursuit. And these are considerations that need to be taken in each of those phases, the seriousness of the offense, road and weather conditions, and the number of vehicles and pedestrians in the vicinity. Subsection 8 is also an addition, which just provides that this section does not create a new statutory cause of action. I haven't, all the feedback I've received was in support of this, and you also have a letter from the City of Eugene Police Chief also supporting this bill.
Same. All right, Senator Harper?
This replaces the dash ones, did I understand that?
That's correct.
All right, and if you remember, as the bill came in, it was just if you had a policy and you simply filed it, put it in the bottom drawer, then suddenly you were immune. The committee looked at that and said, that doesn't make any sense. So we tried originally to give somebody the responsibility of creating a model pursuit policy, but no one seemed to want to touch it. So in essence, what the dash two does is codify some of the significant core points within a policy that we think should be addressed by any police agency that would adopt one. So as a very minimum, they would have to address these issues in filing the policy. And if they do have the policy, then the immunity applies, except where there is some form of, and correct me if I'm wrong, gross negligence on the part of one of the employees who deviates from the policy.
Negligence, actually. It's just unjustified deviation.
Right. So it's not gross negligence. It's just unjustified.
Unjustified deviation. Breaking new ground.
All right. So we're breaking new ground. But for legislative intent, what are we talking about?
We're talking about, in most cases, I think, some sort of a serious deviation from the policy that there isn't good reason to deviate from.
So this would be similar to good faith compliance? Maddox, Kevin, you want to come up here? You look like you're eager to share. But I want to make sure that the record has something in it that is somewhat clear.
Chairman, Kevin Maddox from Salem here on my own behalf. Unjustified deviation is a term of art that's been chosen very precisely. There are times when a written policy will not contemplate a given situation. And there may be a situation where an officer can explain to supervisors, I deviated from the policy, and the supervisors in looking at that will say, yes, your deviation was unjustified. Unjustified means in terms of the policy itself and in terms of the supervisor's determination whether or not the policy was followed. But to give you an example, you may have a situation where officers are following someone and they're going the right direction on a divided highway, but it's only divided by a strip of grass. And this person that they are pursuing in this vehicle suddenly jumps the grass dividing strip and is now going the wrong way on that other, in effect, one-lane highway. Many policies will say you should not pursue the wrong way. But the officers in that situation perhaps are aware that they've got a mile of clear highway and they think that they can catch this person and get them off that road, so they deviate from the pursuit policy, and they know that they're faster vehicles, they were gaining on them or whatever. They can demonstrate in a reasonable way why it was a good idea to continue that pursuit and to get this person off the road, because within some time he would be coming into oncoming traffic but was not yet in that zone based on what they were told by radio traffic. That will be a situation where supervisors would say, okay, you deviated from the policy about not pursuing wrong way on the highway, and you did so for good reasons with reasoned circumstances. That's justified. That's an example.
All right, so help me understand what the process might be. Let's assume that someone feels that they've been harmed as a result of a police pursuit. They file an action. I'm assuming that what we're creating here is some framework under which there might be a motion to dismiss this case, motion for summary judgment, whatever the right terminology is. That would be a factual determination before a judge that would have these facts presented, or I don't know if it would be done through a, I can't even remember the right word. You're a lawyer. What is
motion for summary judgment, Mr. Chairman?
No, motion for summary judgment, but in deposition. I don't know if it would be through depositions or it would be direct testimony in person or whatever, but at some point the judge would determine, based upon the facts, whether or not there is an unjustified deviation or not. And then I assume the judge then would say, I believe that the officer in this case, in fact, is culpable or liable, or the city has some liability, and allow the case to proceed. They wouldn't dismiss the case. Is that correct? Or?
Mr. Chairman, in the first instance, the judge would be looking at what were probably established facts and then trying to determine as a matter of law whether or not there was an unjustified deviation. In looking at that, there'd probably be a couple of steps to the process. One, the justification may be the deviation. Justification may be in the policy itself. There may be specific instances where there's some parameters established and the officer was acting within those parameters, therefore that was not an unjustified deviation, it was a justified deviation. Secondly, the judge may look at the opinions of the supervisors and the officers who are higher ranking who evaluate this, who say, no, in our opinion, this was a justified deviation because of these demonstrated facts. Beyond that, if the judge isn't satisfied at those phases, then the judge may have to make a determination on his or her own that, yes, this is justified or not based on a reasonable person's standards.
Right. Senator Courtney?
Yes, Mr. Chair, this bill fascinates me. I don't know why. I think the chase is one of those dramatic, historic things that the part of police work. You've been a police officer. You've been involved in these. I'm curious where it says that the requirement that the pursuit be conducted under the direction of a supervisor, if said supervisor is available and able to provide direction, it goes on, description of responsibilities of a supervisor. What is a supervisor? What is a supervisor for purposes of the language that's in the dash two amendments? What is a supervisor?
Well, we can get something in the city of Portland here, but basically as it would apply in the agency that I work for, your supervisor would be a sergeant who is generally working one of the shifts. They would be on the air. And in our agency, they have the authority to terminate the chase based upon their perception of whether the situation is becoming too dangerous. So they're monitoring it via the radio. They're also asking questions like, for what reason are you pursuing? What's the purpose you're pursuing? If the officer comes back and says the guy has a burned-out taillight, the sergeant more likely than not is going to say terminate the chase. It's not worth getting engaged in. However, they say it's an armed robbery suspect who just fired several shots at somebody, then they're going to more likely make a decision to continue the pursuit based upon that and the safety of citizens, the time of day, other factors.
So the supervisor, the sergeant's in a car, or he or she's in the station?
Could be in a car, could be in a station, any place where they have the capacity to broadcast or monitor that pursuit.
Okay. Let's say the sergeant comes. Are you going to say something, Marilyn?
I was just going to say, Senator Courtney, from reviewing the various policies that exist both nationally and in Oregon, generally supervisor is not someone in a car at the scene. The supervisor is someone back in the
station. So that's what I'm saying. If this sergeant is in a car, then who does he or she call? Or they're it.
I'm sorry.
So
who does the sergeant?
So I assume that I don't know how to even envision this. Okay. A sergeant obviously answers to somebody. But for purposes of this, they don't have to answer anybody. If they get involved, they don't have to check in.
No, they would. In fact, it would be any of the shifts configured in Portland, there is a lieutenant on any of the three shifts who also monitors and is also notified. And there's also, from time to time during the day shift, there's a captain. There could also be a deputy chief monitoring the air. And if the deputy chief came on, even though they may not be the precinct commander, they have the authority because of their rank to terminate the chase.
Okay, just so the record, we're making whatever we're making here, i.e. the lunch we had at the Supreme Court, looking at Legislative 10. I don't know if you, I hope we're not getting into a chain of command where by the time sergeant, I got to call the lieutenant, got to call the captain, we could get ourselves a situation. Well, forget it. Request, the guy's long gone and I was going to pursue. I guess we're not there. You know about it. I don't know about it, but I
think you've captured the reason why the language, if a supervisor is available. I think the idea here is that you want to make sure that at least somebody has the power to terminate the chase based on their better judgment and their rank. So there's a lot on the shoulders of the police officer in the car doing the pursuit, and there's a substantial responsibility placed on them to comply with the standards of the agency and pursuit policy. But what agencies like mine and a lot of others have done is they have put very stringent standards on the supervisors and the supervisor's supervisor, and so on and so forth, up the ladder, because they take a very serious view of pursuits, and more so because of the results that we've had where individuals have been killed in the process, and the city usually ends up getting sued over those cases at some point or another. Having been in several pursuits myself and totaling two police cars in my career, they're not very fun to be in, not at all. Not that I'm that great a driver. I have been to driving school twice. Senator Metzger. Either Marilyn or Mr. Mannix should probably answer this one. This is on Section 7 and 8, regards the failure of any law enforcement unit to adopt a written policy may not be introduced, et cetera, and same thing with Section 8. The way I read this, so just tell me if I'm right, and if not, correct me, is that first thing I thought this is, boy, you have a policy, and now you don't have to have a policy. But then I looked at this again, and it's what this says is that the failure to have a policy is not in and of itself something in which action can be taken from. Is that basically what we're saying? So you're not creating a new problem, but you don't have the immunity either for the other actions.
Right. I was going to say, Senator Metzger, it's similar to corrective actions. Generally, if someone takes a corrective action, you can't use that against them.
Right.
If somebody doesn't have a policy, you can't use that against them as part of proving their liability because they failed to adopt the policy consistently.
They would just be vulnerable for any of these other problems had they not.
Okay. All right, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Metzger, yes, in fact, that's neither sword nor shield provision. And it's written because of late the Supreme Court of the Court of Appeals from time to time find that the legislature did something that it didn't do, in my opinion, which is you address issue A and they say, well, you didn't address issue B, therefore you must have meant to not do B, and they start adding on. This just says, hey, we're not saying there's anything that comes out of not having a policy, and we're also saying you don't get any defense if you don't have the policy, but we're not saying suddenly you can be sued for not having a policy.
Right. I said, well, Mr. Chair, this is so much better than what we had originally. I mean, talking about the specificity of it, it's good work for all those who worked on it.
Mr. Chair, are you in a work session?
Yes, we are in a work session, actually.
I will move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 163.
All right, Senator Cornyn moves the adoption of the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 163. Additional discussion?
Yeah, this really trashed a good bill, but I guess I'll have to live with it.
No further discussion? Any objections to the adoption of the dash two amendments? If not,
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 163 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Cornyn moves 163 to the floor of the Senate as amended to due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? No objections.
I'm going to milk your coffee, guys.
Actually, no. No, I didn't. I didn't. So.
I'll tell you about my high speed chase someday.
Was it in a jet?
No, it's in a car.
Oh. Who wants to carry this puppy?
I'll do it now that I understand.
Senator Metzger would carry the bill.
Ran empty.
All right. Any further business to come before the committee?
What?
All right. Thank you. By the way, you're getting, if you've not already, you've got the SMSs from the House. Kind of a general admonition of what I'm asking for is that if you get a chance, I know you're busy, to review the SMSs and to try to expedite.
Good idea. I started through them, and it looked like a lot of stuff.
I guess the
okay.
What I'm looking for, is if you have a particular issue with a bill, if you'd like more extended hearings, then what I'm going to
chase them out in the desert of Las Vegas, and I ran into them and stopped and beat them out of it.
And they finally say, ask you to stick, or they're going to stick with us if possible. Send to the hill or something. Not much, but my John did. Is that good?
Start with
the head. They got a single visitor.